This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Steve Martorano. We hope you're joining us for each installment as we speak to experts in various fields regarding behavioral health. We want to foster diverse and meaningful conversations on substance abuse and mental health issues. That's what Recovery Radio is all about. And, of course, it's sponsored by Retreat Behavioral Health, and we'll talk about them more later. Well, foster care is something that you probably have run into from time to time in your reading. Your mainstream media will cover foster care situations, usually not unfortunately, in a positive light. We really only hear about the great things that go on in foster care when something unfortunately may go wrong, or what's going on right now where there is a pressing need. There's always a need to make sure that children are sheltered and giving a loving and nurturing place when everything else has failed them. But never more so than right now, as you can imagine, as we continue to struggle with the worst substance abuse crisis probably in the country's history. So foster care is always important, but as I say, never more so than right now. So we thought we would devote this program to the ins and outs, the nuts and bolts, the ABCs of foster care. And to that end, we welcome someone who's been on the show in the past in a different context, and we welcome her back now to talk about her extensive background as a foster parent. Fran Pfeiffer is our guest. She is an alumni. She's 5 years sober now, having gone through treatment and recovery at Retreat Behavioral Health, and we're pleased to have her back on the air, and we congratulate her on her continued success in the field of recovery, and are grateful for her time to talk about what she knows, which is a lot, about foster care. Hi, Fran.
Hi.
Thanks so much. Fran's the busiest woman in show business. I really, really am getting her in between long shifts at work, and so it's a real pleasure. We're glad to have you. Fran, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am a 50-year-old woman married to my husband for 15 years. And as you said, you know, I am in recovery. I also have two children of my own. My husband has two children, and we adopted a girl about 5 years ago.
Now, you, for 8 years, were foster parents. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us how that started for you and your husband.
How it started was my youngest daughter was living in Michigan with her dad, and my oldest daughter was about 19 years old. Brad's girls live with their mom, and we only saw them every other weekend. So what we were going through, and this was about almost 10 years ago, was an empty nest syndrome, and I just wasn't ready not to have kids in and out of the house. And I happened to be looking, you know, reading the newspaper back when I used to read a newspaper, and I just happened to see a 1-800 number to be a foster parent. And I called it, and that's how we got the ball rolling with it. We just called this 1-800 number and started to go through all the steps and became certified foster parents.
That's interesting. You mentioned empty nesting. That was the motivation for you. You were the kind of person that was used to having children around, and
yes,
and they weren't there. But had you not read that article, I mean, you didn't know anybody who was a foster parent at that time, or
I didn't.
Yeah. Because as I thought about the program, I thought, well, how do you become a foster parent? How does that all work out? That's why we're glad you're here to tell us about that. So, who did you first contact? You saw an article. Was it a social services organization?
No, it was actually in like the one ads. Like it was, it might have been like in the Help Wanted. It said, you know, 1-800, you know, whatever, to become a foster parent, call this number. And when I called the number, it ended up being an agency up in the Berks County area. And they put me in touch with an intake coordinator who then ended up calling us, coming out to our house and seeing that this is what we really wanted to do. And that was my experience with how I got into it. Because as you said, I did not know anyone. I didn't, you know, call any of the third party agencies. I didn't call Lancaster County. I simply called this 1-800 number, and it put me in touch with a foster care agency.
Yeah.
Who who was in need of a home.
Yeah. So how much discussion went on between you and your husband before you saw this ad and responded to it?
Not a whole lot. I mean, he knew, obviously, he'd been married to me. He knew I loved kids. He knew I missed them in my life. We talked about it a little bit, and it was more like, let's just call and see what they have to say. No harm, no foul. And we did that. And then once we started talking to them and started going through the steps, like gathering paperwork, taxes, that sort of thing, getting licensed, then he had his doubts, and we would talk about it as we went along. And I can honestly tell you that my husband was not 100% on board until maybe 3 years into us being foster parents.
Really? 3 years?
Yeah, he just did it for me, mostly. He kind of led it to me. Of course, he was here. He always provided for the kids. He was always here for the kids. But he kind of had one foot in, one foot out. And then once we started learning more and more about it and getting different children with different behaviors and whatnot, then he really was all in. And yeah. And then, you know, by the time, like, now we are no longer foster parents, but by the time we ended up closing our home, he was 150% involved in with it.
Yeah. Well, you were, I get, you know, obviously you were lucky in that even though he was a little, there was some trepidation there. He was trusting enough to go, okay, she wants to do this. And, you know,
yeah,
I'm going to support her for doing that. But I would guess in most cases, one of the first things, a family should do, and this would include kids that are already in the house, your own children.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who still have their own children who are also in foster care, that everybody is on the same page before you make this leap. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're exactly right. We sat down with our kids, even though three of our four kids were not living with us, we did exactly that. Like, this is what we're thinking about doing. We'd like to do this. This is what it involves. You know, this is what we expect of you, which wasn't much, you know, just, you know, keep your hearts and your minds open is all we ask, you know. And then, yes, that is exactly what happened. Yeah. We talked to our children to see, you know, this doesn't mean we don't love you. It just means that we want to help other children. You know, can you, you know, what do you think about this?
Right.
We absolutely had that discussion.
How old were your children when you brought this up to them?
Hannah was 17. Sydney was 15, and Brad's girls were like 9 and 10, 8 and 10.
So I would guess that, well, there's a range of attitudes and opinions that kids would have. The older ones might be inclined to go, what are you kidding? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
The older ones who see the responsibilities and, the duties there. And the younger ones might be confused about, gee, are they going to pay less attention to me? Was that pretty much what you confronted?
Absolutely. That's exactly what happened, Steve. And it is what happened. I mean, I could talk about this for days, foster care and the trials and tribulations. But yes, that is what happened. Hannah, you know, once we got our first placement and she came into the home and we asked Hannah for some help. You know, she was 18 years old. Hey, can you help us get Christina here or there? You know, like, we kind of had to share the responsibility of daycare and whatnot, because when she came into our home, I was working full time and Hannah was definitely not on board. She was not happy about it. But she did it because she's family and she was our child. And she eventually, you know, came to grow and love Christina. Same thing happened with Brad's girls. You know, they came over every other weekend. Who's this new person in our home? We don't know her. You know, this is weird. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
All the emotions.
Well, anybody.
But they ended up like being sisters.
Anybody who has had children of their own know that having, you know, siblings get along under the same roof can be difficult. I'm curious about a couple of things. First of all, how old was the first child you brought into your home?
She was 10.
So is that in terms of foster care, is that a kind of average age, or is that an older?
It's,
is that, older kid.
Yeah, it's kind of average. It is kind of average. It's definitely a very difficult age to place. You know, and we were obviously, maybe not obviously, but we were hoping for a younger child, you know, smaller, toddler, what have you. And it just didn't, you know, we joke that we already had two double-digit girls. Brad's girls were, like I said, about 8 to 10, and we already had that. We had already gone through with my girls. We didn't need another 10-year-old girl, but that's what God gave us, and we joke that he did it because, you know, he knew we could do it.
Yeah, well, yeah, clearly. I mean, because that's not an uncommon feeling among people who are, you know, going to try foster care, bringing somebody in the house. I can't imagine anything more, not frightening, but something that you would, something big and unknown as bringing a complete stranger into your house and hoping that they integrate so that not only, you know, your life isn't upset and your kids, but that they get the benefit of being in a loving and nurturing environment. That's really a... it's really remarkable, and it's also remarkable that you had so much help doing it. You mentioned you were full time working when you became a foster parent. Is that a common thing, or are they looking for at home moms or dads? Or
you know, it's funny, Steve. I don't know the statistics, obviously, but I'm sure there's both. For me, it was I was working full time because we were always a two income household. And, you know, when Christina came, there's so many rules and regulations with being a foster parent. And even though she was a very, very capable, smart, mature girl when she came to us, like we could have left her in the morning sitting on the couch and she would sit there reading a book and we would get home and she wouldn't have moved from that spot on the chair reading her book, you know. But she still wasn't allowed to be without supervision.
Yeah.
So we had to, you know, look at daycare, that kind of thing.
Right.
So she was the oldest kid at after school care, and
right,
yeah.
Did she like dogs?
Yeah. Oh my God.
We're gonna take our first break, and maybe you can feed Fido there.
Yeah, exactly.
Sounded great. Fran Pfeiffer is our guest. Am I doing that right, Pfeiffer?
No, it's Pfeffer, P-E-F-F-E-R.
Pfeffer, I'm sorry. Fran Pfeffer is our guest. We're talking about her remarkable story as a foster parent and her family, and it was all hands on deck. Foster care is the topic on Recovery Radio. Stay with us. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. We're talking about foster care. As I mentioned at the outset of the program, never more important that children who desperately need a you know, nurturing and safe environment when no one else is around to take care of that is always important in any community, and it's really important now as so many children are either being raised by grandparents because their parents are having substance abuse problems or lucky enough to get into a loving and nurturing situation in foster care. Fran Pfeffer is our guest. She has done it for 8 years. How many children went through your home in that eight-year period, Fran?
We had 17.
17? Just, that's remarkable. So how many, at a time were in the house during that period?
When we first started, we didn't know what we were getting into, obviously. And we got a placement of a 10-year-old girl, Christina. And she ended up being our first placement, and she never left. Then after that, we realized how many sibling groups there were in foster care that people couldn't or wouldn't take in for various reasons. So we opened our home up to sibling groups, and we had 5 sibling groups since then. Our biggest was a sibling group of 4, and then we had a couple sets of 2 and 1 set of 3.
I want to get into that in a second here, but let's take it back a little bit to when you make the first step. They don't. Whatever agency you dealt with, they just don't show up with children. You have to go through a licensing process. Is that right? I mean, foster care
Correct.
Is a licensed practice, right?
Absolutely.
Tell us about the how you navigated your way through that and what they expected you to do.
It's like the most extensive job interview clearance I've ever been through in my life. They do FBI clearances. They do criminal background checks. They take our tax forms from like the last 5 years. They interview people and friends. You have to write a bio on yourself. It's definitely an extensive process. Classes, you must take classes and get trained and everything before you become a foster parent. It's grueling. It is grueling to, for me, for us, it was grueling, but it was worth it.
Yeah, that's another thing that I think people are not prepared for when they take this leap. I guess the sense is, hey, I'm willing to do this. Why are you making it so? Making it so hard, but obviously they're doing it for the children. The sibling notion is fascinating. I can't think of anything more heartbreaking than having to break up siblings. But you say that goes on fairly routinely because people just can't handle it, right?
Exactly.
When did you become aware of that? Did you have someone that was going to be placed with you that you knew had a sibling that wasn't going to be with them? Is that how you got involved in it?
We did. After Christina, we didn't have a placement for a couple years, and then we got two little boys. They were 4 and 5, and they were 2 of 6 siblings and that were in foster care, and they were in 5 different homes. Mm. So 6 children in 5 different homes. And what happened with those boys is we had them for 1.5 years. They were actually our longest placement. And what happened with them was we fought to get more of their siblings together because we had the room for all 6, and we fought to keep them together. And the county that we were going through ended up taking the boys away from us because we fought to keep them together.
Why do you suppose that happened?
We think it was because what happened was when they placed them all, they had behaviors, and there was 3 boys and 3 girls. And when they placed all the children, they placed them in the foster homes. And then the foster parents bonded with these children. And what the county did in our eyes is they placed more thought and respect in the foster parent bond with these children and taking them out of those homes they've been in than the bonds they had with their siblings.
Mm. Well, that makes I can understand part of that, because foster care, people willing to do foster care are the commodity that's most desired. I mean, there's no end to the kids, but it's difficult finding people that are willing to do what you and your family were willing to do. So I can see some accommodation towards the desires of the foster families. But again, breaking up kids. So the 2 boys that you brought in, when you became aware that they had siblings that were scattered everywhere, were they telling you that they missed their siblings?
Oh, it was all, yeah, they missed them all the time. And we tried to get them together. Like, the court had court mandated visits with the parents and siblings. But that was like, you know, they only saw their siblings like once a week for like an hour stuck in this, you know, 12 by 12 room, like 6 children, 2 parents in this 12 by 12 room, trying to get to know each other or play or have some sense of normalcy. So we tried to initiate with the other families outside sibling get-togethers and that sort of thing. And that brings on a whole other side of foster parenting and feelings. The families felt threatened. The other foster families felt threatened because they knew that we wanted all these children together, and it just created a really bad, toxic environment for the foster parents. It turned into being more about the foster parents than it was about the children. And my husband and I fought that till the end and ended up losing the biggest thing we could lose. We lost the boys.
Yeah, you know, so going forward, now you did this for 8 years, so you've seen – You've seen some of the barriers and some of the pitfalls that can occur. Can people who are thinking about getting into foster care kind of preempt that stuff by getting it all straight? In other words, if I wanted to do this and I went to an agency and I said, look, I'm interested in this, but only if I can get siblings. I don't want to get involved in a fight over where these kids – can you do that ahead of time? Are you aware?
Oh, if only – if only it was that easy. That's the thing with foster care, Steve, is there's so many variables. so many variables, and I don't like to pump myself or my husband up, but I'll tell you, it is not for the faint of heart. When you get into this, not only you can say, yes, I'd like to only have siblings, and then you could, get a set of siblings, and then, oh, by golly, 3 months later, you might find out that the aunt in Georgia, who never wanted anything to do with them,
suddenly
all
does.
Of a sudden wants to be a resource home for these children.
Yeah.
So, you've bonded with them, gotten them through some behaviors, so many things, gotten them into services, and now, Aunt Betty wants to come and take them, and she's never met them before.
Yeah, you know what? I don't want to get too farther ahead on this segment, because this is exactly why we want Fran Pfeffer with us, because she has been there and done that for almost a decade as a foster family. More with Fran straight ahead. This is Recovery Radio. Don't go away. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Steve Martorano with you. We're talking about a pressing need always that kids are sheltered and taken care of in a nurturing and safe environment, and foster care fills that gap. But there are never enough people that want to do this. We're getting a real inside view of what we're talking about when we talk about taking this responsibility on of being a foster parent. Fran Pfeffer is our guest. She did it for over 8 years. She is telling us about basically the joy she got out of this, but the difficulties inherent in something as important as taking care of children from outside your home. Fran, before we get into more of your experiences here, I just don't want to leave people, because I know this is the case, I don't want to leave people with the notion that you and your family were sort of burned out by that experience or soured on foster care. This happened several years ago, right? You continued.
Yeah.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about, you mentioned how rigorous the examination is for people who want to become foster parents, taxes, background records, criminal records, personality profiles. How much information do you get about the children that are coming into your house? And what should people who are thinking about becoming foster parents ask? What kind of questions, what kind of questions should they know about the kind of children that are coming into their home?
Well, when you apply or what have you, you tell them what preferences you would want as far as children go. And it sounds like so cruel, but it's just the way it is. Like, what ages do you want? What ethnicities would you take? Or what ethnicities would you not take? What behaviors would you not take? Fire starters, those kinds of things. A lot of children have mental health issues. So you go through that check and balance with them, and then you get a call saying they have this kiddo or these two kiddos in care. They give you like very brief, like name, age, ethnicity, like I said, and then if there's any kind of behavioral problems, they give you a brief overview, and you can say, yeah, this, we're willing to give this a try, and then they come to your home and you work through it.
When you say work through it, what sort of support and services are available to a foster family when they run into problems that maybe they can't handle, but they don't want to turn the child out? Are there a broad range of services available?
There are. What I would suggest people do is when we got children in our home, those boys that I mentioned had extreme behaviors that I had never, ever seen in children before. And the agency was very helpful. And then agencies since then have been very helpful with our kiddos. They have services. You contact your agency first. Tell them that, you need some services for these kiddos. And they'll get you set up with the school, counseling services, whether it's IU-13 services, that sort of thing. And you advocate for those children like they're your own is what you do. And the only difference is you're not able to sign for them. You have to get, permission from the caseworkers and what have you. But that's what I've always done, is advocated for those kiddos to get them the services that I feel they need and deserve.
Oh, that's a great point, because I think too many people might think of foster care as merely providing a place to sleep, a roof over your head, and food, when that's not it at all. Because, you, as you mentioned, these kids come to you pretty damaged, don't they?
very damaged, and it's so much more than putting them to bed, getting them on the bus in the morning. It's so much more than that.
How much time do you think you devoted to this advocacy for them? Because I can see you running back and forth to schools and counselors and social workers.
Well, I'll tell you what happened was, we mentioned earlier in the segment, when we got these two boys, 4 and 5, their behaviors are so bad that I ended up quitting my full-time job because there was no daycare or preschool service that was going to accept them into their facility because their behaviors were so extreme. So I quit my job and advocated for these boys and took them to their appointments. And with appointments, therapy, that sort of thing, visits, that alone is a full-time job for some kids and some families. So I spent all of my time doing that, and it was fulfilling. I loved it, and I continued to do it, like you said, for, 6 or 8 more years. But it was definitely a full-time job. But it takes a village, is what we always
yes.
say. I had a lot of help.
Well, let me ask you about the boys again, because I may have forgotten. How old were they when they first came in to live with you?
They were 4 and 5.
And you say their behavior was so, I don't know how to describe it, that you couldn't even get them into any kind of quality daycare. Were they, you describe them for me. What sort of behaviors are we talking about?
Aggression, cursing, spitting, throwing things, temper tantrums, basically like, a 2-year-old in a 4 and 5-year-old body, along with, a 2-year-old with a very extensive vocabulary of obscenities and that sort of thing. Rage issues. What it is, Steve, is these kids have trauma in their life.
Yes.
And we didn't learn this until a few placements later, and they don't know how to deal with their feelings. They have big feelings and no way to express them. They've never learned how.
Yeah, it's interesting. These are not just kids misbehaving. These are kids that are angry and have been through some horrific circumstances even at a young age and
yes.
don't know how to deal. Well, so let me ask you the question here, because people are listening going, my gosh, she quit her job to spend more time with mm-hmm. the situation like that. What do you suppose was your motivation? Not a lot of people would have done that, I don't think.
No, I get that a lot. Steve, these kids needed me, they needed me. And as naughty as they were, and gosh, we say it with love, like we wanted to help them. We wanted to give them stability. And when they were in our home, you could see changes in them day to day to day. Like every time we'd go to a visit with their other siblings and other foster parents, the foster parents or the caseworkers would say, oh my gosh, they've changed so much. Look at how they've grown. Oh, look, they can sit and do things now. It was just amazing to see their growth and to see them open up their little minds and hearts to someone loving them and taking care of them with stability and guidance and love. You can overcome anything.
That's a remarkable description. For people that are wondering, I'll try to phrase this in the proper way. Foster parents are compensated monetarily for this, but clearly nobody is going to get wealthy doing it. And there's probably
right.
not enough money in the world for people to take on some of the responsibilities you have. But there is money involved in this, right?
There is. Depending on where your children are from, what county they're with, they pay what they call a daily stipend to the foster parent. And I'll just give you a range. It could be anywhere from $10 to $20 a day per child.
So
you're getting paid, hypothetically, if I have 2 kiddos, I might get, $35 a day
right.
compensation for these kiddos.
Right. And that is what that covers clothing and food and
yes.
that's what that money's for, right?
Correct. Yes. Food, all their necessities, that sort of thing. They do always have health insurance, so that is a burden that you don't have to worry about. That was always a relief for me. You know, your prescriptions are always covered and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. Mm-hmm. They're covered under state insurance, so that's never a burden. Mm-hmm. But when they come to you too, Steve, a lot of times, you know, they come with the clothes on their back.
Right.
I mean, literally.
Right, right. During this period of time when they are in your care, what is their involvement with their actual parents or family members? Are they in their lives, and to what extent?
And again, that's case-by-case basis. It depends. Our experience has been we've gotten kiddos at all different ranges of their placement, but when we've had the kiddos, their visits have been like 1 to 2 times a week for an hour or two a week. So generally they're seeing their parents once a week for an hour, or maybe once a week for 2 hours. And it's usually in the beginning, it's a process that the agencies go through. Parents have to work a plan. They have to do certain things, and then they get privileges. In the beginning, the visits are supervised mm-hmm. in the county building or in a third party facility, and you take the kids there, you drop them off, or you wait in the waiting room. They visit with their parents in a supervised setting, and then you take them home again afterwards.
Did you find that to be, this is going to sound strange as well, I guess, but did you find that to be beneficial to the children? Or I can imagine sometimes it could be upsetting to the situation.
It is always upsetting. It's a catch-22, Steve, because obviously for Brad and I, we talked about this a little bit, but not much. When we became foster parents, the main goal of foster parenting typically is reunification with the biological parents. That a lot of people will disagree with me, and we could go on for days about that, but that's the goal, reunification with the parents. So what happens is, you know, as a foster parent, I'm supportive. I try to be supportive of the foster parents and of the visits. But with those visits comes, again, so many big feelings and so many things that these kids can't handle. They haven't seen them. They don't understand what's going on. Even in our older sibling groups that we've had, every time we would have a visit with their parents, even 12-year-olds know what's going to happen. They're going to go, they're going to come back with me, and then they're going to see their mom again next week. It never failed. I would get a call from the school every time there was a visit, because my one kiddo would not get on the bus and would act up because he would have so much fear about his parents and what was going to happen at the visit, and were they going to show up? Were they going to be late? You know, were they going to feed them? You know, it's so many feelings. So it's beneficial for them to see their parents, but there's so many triggers that come along with those visits as well.
It's not for the faint of heart. I can hear that. Fran Pfeffer is our guest. We're talking about her experience, all positive, as tough as it sounds, all positive with her and her family's experience as being a foster family. We have more with Fran straight ahead. This is Recovery Radio. Don't go away. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Our guest has been Fran Pfeffer. She is an old friend of the program. She is a member and good standing of the Retreat Behavioral Health alumni group. Fran had her struggles with substance abuse, went into treatment at Retreat, and now is celebrating 5 years of sobriety. So congratulations on that. But her story has been about taking children into their home, her and her husband and their children, over an almost 10-year period, 8 years as foster parents. Through that 8-year period, they fostered 17 children over that period of time. This has been an amazing and real eye-opener, Fran. You speak with such candor. Warts and all, because clearly this is not an easy thing. But I know there are people who at least think they want to do this. You know, empty nesters, folks like you who have an absolute need to help other people who are, you know, blameless and give them a better life. What advice do you give people who are sitting around sort of toying with this idea of becoming a foster parent?
I say just do it, because you will never know until you try. You know, there's, I can't tell you how many times my husband and I have heard over the years, oh, I could never do that. I could never do what you do. Yes, you could. Yes, you could, and you should, because there is such a need for it. We were just typical, normal people. You know, people say, well, I'm a single parent. I can't do it. Yes, you can. I don't own my home. You don't need to own your own home. You know, I'm a recovering alcoholic and addict, and I did it. You know, it's, you can do it.
Let me ask you about that. You're only in the context of foster care. What happened when your medical background, your history of substance abuse came up? How did these agencies who placed the children react to all that?
Well, that's the first thing I asked them when they came out to do our interview. Is I said, "Look, I've had a DUI. Is that going to stop all this?" You know, and they said, "No, absolutely not. Everyone has a history. Everyone has a past. That doesn't mean you can't be a foster parent." And then just as long as I, you know, stayed sober and that sort of thing, it was never an issue. It actually, I feel like it opened me up and my husband up to having a better understanding of the parents going through this, because there was no judgment. How could I judge any of these biological parents for losing their children when it could have very well happened to me? Had I not had the family I had when I was going through what I was going through.
You think it had any impact on your successful sobriety?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
What are the alternatives for children who cannot get into a foster home? Where are they? Are they in? I mean, I think of an orphanage. Do we still have orphanages?
There's group homes, you know, that sort of thing. You know, or what? Or there's a lot of different levels of foster care. A lot of children, Steve, when they come into foster care, and then they're typically an emergency placement until they, you know, and then there's homes out there that just do like short term emergency placements. And then they, you know, kind of assess the situation and where the kiddos should be in the school district and what have you. And then they're placed into short or long-term foster homes. We were always open to anything. So what happens is we would get the kiddos and they would come to us. And then if 5 months down the line, it wasn't, because we were open to adopt, but sometimes the fit just isn't right, and the time in your life it might not be right. So if it looked like these kids were going to stay in care and then go out, you know, to be adopted, then they would go to a long-term resource home, an adoptive home. So Brad and I were sometimes the bridge for parents or foster parents who only wanted to adopt. But if they aren't in a foster home, or if there's an overabundance, especially the older kids, they typically go to residential or group homes, that sort of thing.
It's important, I would guess, for people thinking about this that, or just beginning to be foster parents, to be honest about what's going on, because if it's a struggle and it's the wrong fit, it's the wrong fit for the child too. So you have to be honest about that, right? And not feel guilty if you have to say to somebody, this isn't working.
Exactly. It is. That's the hardest thing to say. And we've said it. We had to say it a couple times in our terms as foster parents. And it is very, very difficult. I can't even get into the emotions that are involved with that. But you're right, Steve. It is important, because there is someone out there that they're going to be the right fit for. You know, some of our kiddos bonded with us. And some of them did not. You know, some have attachments so strong with their parents that they're never going to completely integrate into your home. Then there's other kiddos that never had a bond, that never got that nurturing, and they're just going to suck it up and be like a little loving sponge and just thrive in a home, you know, that gives them love and stability.
And you certainly had that experience. This began over 8 years ago. 17 children were under your care and your roof and your family's love and shelter. And the first one is still with you, right? You adopted the first child, right?
We did. Yep. We joked that Christina came and never left. Yeah, she came to us right before her 11th birthday, and she'll be 19 in July. And we adopted her about 5 years ago.
You know what? That's just spectacular. You know, there's a lot of tension. We all know what's going on in the country. The divisions and the news is always bad, and it's refreshing. At least it has been for me to talk to some good people. And you and your family are a whole bunch of good people. Thanks for sharing that story with us. It's a remarkable thing you've done. I mean, it really is a remarkable thing. And Fran, her advice to anybody thinking about it is just do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fran, thanks so much for joining us on Recovery Radio. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate having the opportunity.
Take care. And by the way, everybody, don't forget, Recovery Radio is sponsored by Retreat Behavioral Health. You need more information about foster care or anything regarding behavioral health, it's 855-859-8801. That's 855-859-8801. See you next time.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.